Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
I'm not trying to apologize for Jerry, but I think to me, what fans don't realize is every nickel you give to somebody else, you're taking away from Parsons, you're taking away from Lamb. And until you figure out what it costs them, it's hard to do the other deals.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos as always. And Michael, let me wish you a happy new year. The new league year came Wednesday. We are now in the 2024 NFL season, buddy. How are we doing today?
We're good. We're doing great. I mean, you know, free agency started on Monday. I think it ended Tuesday night. It's kind of dead now, right? I think everybody has spent their money or now they go back and re-sign their guys. I think we'll see some of that. Doesn't sound like a lot of trade available. I'm sure if you called Buffalo up and you wanted Stephon Diggs, I'm sure they would have a conversation with you. They would deny that they're trying to do that, but I think that would be true. And so I don't hear very much other out than that on the street. It seems pretty quiet. They say there's a move that Houston has that they're going to make. I don't know what that is, which is the impetus behind, you know, trading Malik Collins, but I haven't been able to run that down yet to see where that's going. So, you know, your Dallas Cowboys, finally, they stole a player from the 49ers at the last second. Mike Zimmer came in and get one of his old guys to come back to him. So you're on the board, Femi. You got to feel good about it.
At the 11th hour, Zimmer coming in to swoop up Eric Kendricks, who I'm not sure can still run anymore, but hopefully he's good for Dallas. That'll be an interesting position. Linebacker was a need for them. We don't know what the status is of Leighton Vander Esch going forward with the neck injury and all that stuff. And linebacker definitely a position of weakness.
I think you can count him out.
Yeah.
I think you can count him out.
Which is unfortunate, but I think it's him.
And then we have, have you ever seen more conversation about a quarterback who's won 10 games in all your life? I just did Chicago radio before we started the pod. And, you know, their whole thing is like, we just wait till we get the right deal. Like, don't you think that if the right deal was coming, you would have had it by now? Like, it's like if you put your house up, everybody thinks their home's worth more than it actually is, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of the fallacies in real estate. You know, I think this. But when you do the market comps in the neighborhood, nobody wants to hear that because you have a certain sense of loyalty to your home. Well, the Bears, the Bears fans, I mean, they expect this to get so much. And where is the market, Femi? Where is the market? I've been asking. Nobody answers.
It's non-existent. And we've seen some of the insiders, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, said that the Bears haven't really had discussions to trade Justin Fields. Not really buying that one.
Come on.
I know. I saw that. I saw that, and I was like, this one's rich. Straight. I mean, might have been should have been Ryan Poles who was talking instead of Ian Rappaport on that one.
Did they write the press release for? I mean, look, I get AN has got to do that. I understand that it's a give and take business. I understand completely, right? But I mean, to actually think, it's like to actually think Buffalo doesn't want to move Diggs, to actually think that they don't want to move Fields is like ridiculous, right?
It's insane.
Like, come on. It's insane. It's completely insane. It's just the fun of the whole offseason and how we get caught up on tangents, you know, whether it's something to do with Aaron Rodgers, whether it's something to do which we're not going there. Yes. I'm not going down that road.
Speaking of a tangent.
Last I checked, all I will say about this commentary is this, and I told this to Elliot the other day. The last I checked, the vice presidency job doesn't pay $50 million a year. So can we end that conversation, please? That's all I'm going to say.
Yep.
And I think to me, it's like these, you know, the narratives that come out, nobody wants to discuss the actual impact of these free agents on their teams. Like Cincinnati signing Von Bell today to go with Geno Stone. And, you know, if you look at their situation, right, they, you know, that's one of the weaknesses of their team, and they improved it. So you got to get, you know, you got to take a look at things like that. How did the team improve? Did we move the needle? And I think that's what's kind of gets overlooked a little bit because we focus so much on the star guys.
Yeah, no, the Von Bell signing is really interesting there. That just came out today, going back to the Cincinnati Bengals, where he once was before he went to the Panthers in free agency last year, sort of surprised the Bengals and caught them off guard. We also saw that happen with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. He was on the Eagles, then he went to the Lions in free agency. Now he just went back to the Eagles, signing a three-year deal. It almost feels like the Eagles admitting a little bit of, all right, we probably shouldn't have let this guy leave the building here, and they were much better on the back end with him. Now he's back in the fold where we knew the secondary of Philadelphia needed a lot of help based on how they were playing in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and I think they would have liked to have had Justin Simmons, but I think that price got too expensive and they had to bail on that one. So, look, I think that's what you do as a good team, right? If you just have one player that you want, then you're going to overspend. But if you can tell the agent, look, either you want this deal or I'm going to another guy. You know, it's like high school dating. I mean, if you think you've got somebody else you can go date, you got to go tell them and say it. That is what, and the agents are doing that to you. Oh, no, we got a better deal than that, you know? And I think to me, the interesting one was this Calvin Ridley deal.
Yes.
So much was made of it. You know, when I kept seeing Jacksonville sign, you know, when they signed Duvernay, they signed Gabe Davis, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, okay, they signed Gabe Davis for around 13. That told me 13 a year. That told me Ridley was looking for a number somewhere in the 20s, right? So they went with a cheaper guy, and they got basically they took Duvernay's contract, and they took Gabe Davis, and they put it into one deal. And okay, now we got two for one over Ridley. I mean, I could see that, right? I'm not saying it's the wrong thing, but it makes sense to you, right? So. You know, and now Ridley's coming back. I don't know how you could bring him back when you've committed all that money. You got Kirk making a ton of money. You got Zay Jones. You got Gabe Davis. And then you got Duvernay. Not that they overpaid Duvernay, but I'm just saying, you know, Duvernay was an expensive deal. But they still, how do you have that many guys? And then you're putting so much allocation to it.
You know, what's interesting with Ridley is that I felt like during this whole process that it was either going to be Jacksonville or New England. Those were the two teams that people were talking about with Ridley. Then Tennessee yesterday afternoon kind of comes out of nowhere. I mean, maybe among league circles that the Tennessee Titans were thought of as a dark horse, but I hadn't really seen anything about the Tennessee Titans going ahead and making this move for a veteran. I mean, they pay Ridley 4 years, $92 million. At least what's being reported, $50 million guaranteed. Adam Schefter had that one from ESPN. But this is kind of further, I guess, I want to say like a vote of not necessarily a vote of confidence, but at least trying to go ahead and build around a quarterback in Will Levis, who they at least believe is a great quarterback in the making.
Right. And I think that they obviously know that Trayvon Burks isn't consistent, nor does he play to the level that they hoped he would. I mean, remember, they traded him for A.J. Brown. That turned out really well for him.
Yeah.
So ended up paying this contract. The Ridley deal. Right. And this proves the point that when you're willing to kind of One thing about the third day of free agency, the water seeks its level. The market has been declared, and people are going to spend what they spend. So when you turn around and then you come in to Ridley and say, look, we'll go to 23 a year if that's actually the deal, and I don't know that, but it clearly was more than what I think people were in that $17, $18 million a year range that the Titans just blew them out of the water, and they used their cap room to make it happen to give a quarterback another guy. And they've revamped their offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at it. You know, they sign Tony Pollard, and you hope he's healthy because he's a great player if he's healthy, but he didn't look like a great player last year. Spears is that loose play player, right? Mm-hmm. They get him. So now, you know, they got skill. They get a receiver, Ridley, to go along with Hopkins as the inside kind of possession receiver. But now all of a sudden it's going to come down to can they fix this offensive line, which then lends itself to the draft, right? And they got to fix the defensive front because the defensive front wasn't any good. They got to fix the defense too because the defense wasn't very good either.
Yeah, tackle's a big need for the Tennessee Titans there. What they had at left tackle last year, that's not going to cut it. And they need to keep Will Levis upright and healthy and if they want to get a true evaluation of him. So we'll see what the Tennessee Titans do. It's an interesting team. Brian Callahan, first year as the head coach there. He has his dad with him, Bill Callahan, to coach up the offensive line. So you would at least anticipate that old line plays a little bit better. But they do have a lot of work left for them to do.
I think offensive line coaches are good ones are underpaid because if you end up getting a rookie, if you get some young player to play for 4 years, you know, say you draft a guy in the fourth round and you get a rookie to play for 4 years at that contract, you know, that's huge. That's a huge deal. I mean, I think what we're seeing with Baltimore, I think Baltimore has taken that same approach, right? So what did Baltimore do? Baltimore traded the great Morgan Moses back to the Jets. Love that, right? The Jets, you know, they absolutely need it. And so Baltimore's saying, okay, we redid Ronnie Stanley's deal, and now we're going to play all these kids we drafted. You know, the one kid, I can't say his name, they drafted in the sixth round. They're going to play him at left guard. They got Falalea, I don't know how to say his name. The kid from Minnesota, the big right. Falalea at right tackle. They drafted him in the fourth round. They got Ben Cleveland. They drafted in the third round at right guard. They got Linderbaum at center. And so they're going to go young, and they're going to go with – and they have a plan. I mean, I think this is what you see with Baltimore. We have a plan. Okay, we're not signing Patrick Queen. We drafted Trenton Simpson in the third round last year. That's the plan. He replaces them. Okay, now we move on. And I think that's what good teams do. You anticipate you're not going to re-sign the guy. So you draft a guy a year before. Now, I think, frankly, I don't know what you thought, but I thought Baltimore's offensive line was one of the weak parts of their team. I thought Morgan Moses was a weak tackle. I thought Ronnie Stanley didn't play very well when he actually did play, right? So I think, to me, when I looked at Baltimore, they needed to upgrade. You know, were they going to bring Zeitler back? I don't know. Why would they? They got to play the younger guys. But my point on that line coach, if he makes this work, shit, he's worth $5 million a year. Because 100%. All the money he's saving the cap. This is what it's so hilarious how people don't understand the value added when you get somebody who brings that to the table. And I think when you get a good line coach, like the Eagles, the Eagles are going to pay that line coach whatever it takes to keep them.
Yep.
They got a really good line coach. He develops the players. You know, part of coaching isn't about what runs you design. Part of coaching, a big part of coaching isn't what scheme you have. The biggest part of coaching is who have you made better. At the end of the year, you're a coach. At the end of the year, who have you improved their game? Now, as an executive in the league, sometimes you can improve a guy's game, but he still ain't good enough. But the coach that does that are the coaches that are always going to get paid and be valuable.
Especially with the current CBA where there's not a whole lot of practice time. If you can develop those guys, you have such a big edge over other teams where you're kind of scrambling for those reps, and especially on the offense and defensive line. It's like if those guys aren't hitting, it's hard to really sort of develop and get them ready for the season. So if you can go ahead and do that, it's a big edge in terms of what you have over the rest of the competition there. The Baltimore Ravens, we'll get into this also on the other side as well, some of these other topics that we saw signed since we last had our podcast. But the Ravens signing Derrick Henry to go ahead and tote the rock for for them there. So an interesting Heisman Trophy-led backfield with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry for the Baltimore Ravens. A lot of people excited about that one. 2 years, $16 million as Henry, who has been the face of the Tennessee Titans organization for so long, now joins the Ravens in what should be an interesting Baltimore Ravens team this year as they look to get back to the AFC title game. All right, we'll break it all down next here on the GM Shuffle. You know, Cowboys fans have been pulling their hair out all free agency long, wanting the team to make big splashes and get active in this first wave of free agency here.
Well, I think this is a whole misconception. I mean, everybody's kind of taken on Skip Bayless because he said all in comma my ass or something like that. You know, the comma got a lot of work. I didn't realize commas were that important.
They're
didn't Dr. Evil's father invent the question mark? You know, I mean, so like, I didn't, who invented the comma? Anyway, like what Jerry said was he was all in on signing Lamb, signing Parsons and redoing his quarterback. I don't think he said we're going to overspend in free agency. Like, if you were going to overspend, okay, I overspend, the Raiders overspend for Wilkins, but that's a good overspend. Yeah. I don't think they overspend. You can't overspend for a great player. Yeah. But, like, tell me, like, okay, Danielle Hunter. I mean, Danielle Hunter ended up making less money than Montez Sweat got. Think about that. Mm. He got less money than Montez Sweat got in the open market. So for all the people that think, well, Chicago, you know, there's no way he would have gotten way more. No, I mean, Brian Burns got 28. Brian Burns, the second highest paid defensive end. Now, they overspent for him. Mm-hmm. They did. But, you know, now with Thibodeau and Burns on the outside, they're going to brush four, play coverage, try to keep the ball in front of them, you know, not take chances, try to slow the game down. Will it work? I don't know, you know. I have a sneaky feeling they may be in the quarterback market. It's going to be fascinating to see this next 4 weeks where the Giants go to watch these quarterbacks. Are they going to be the Michigan? You know, they're going to be there, obviously, but what level of interest do they have? I think it'll be a sneaky one to take a look at. But the Cowboys, like, who have they missed out on? Like, who have, like, every Cowboy fan's going crazy. Like, who would you have liked to sign and overspend and take money away from Parsons?
Well, I don't think it would have been, like, an overspending.
Take money away from Lamb.
Yeah. I mean, those guys are going to get top of the market type of deals. I would have liked to see them go ahead and get, like, someone like a Zach Moss at running back because they missed that power at running back without Ezekiel Elliott. And he signed for about $8 million or so, I believe it was, over 2 years. Like, it wasn't that big. It wasn't like a Saquon Barkley type of deal or even a Derrick Henry type of deal going to the Baltimore Ravens, because that's what a lot of Cowboys fans wanted. They wanted Derrick Henry. I wasn't really in the Henry camp because I think we've been saying this for a couple years, but like eventually the wear and tear is going to catch up to him. But I just wanted something like a Zach Moss to just bring a little bit of power, because right now they don't even have like a running back on the roster. Even Rico Dowdle's a free agent. Like, they're putting themselves in a position where they're going to have to draft somebody, and I've at least wanted a little bit more protection before we got to the draft time.
I think you can find one, but look, here's what I think people don't understand about Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's a commitment. Derrick Henry's not a back you sign. He's a commitment. You got to run what he runs. You got to run inside zone. You got to run outside zone. You got to run those runs. You got to be under center quite a bit. You got to be able to get him the football. He's not that big in the passing game. People know he's getting the ball. You're committed to him. You build the offense around him. And when you've got Lamb and you've got Prescott, do you want to build an offense around a back? I don't think you do.
No, not at 30.
I don't think he's the right fit. Do you want to commit? I think he's a great player. I think he went to the right team. I mean, Baltimore, it went to the perfect team. They run those plays. Lamar gives them a dynamic. He can bootleg and naked and run all those inside and outside zone stuff. So, like, I think when you got to commit to that guy, it's a hard thing to do. So, you know, look, can they find another back? Yeah. Like, look, Houston traded for Mixon. Do you think Mixon would have solved them at that number? Yeah. I don't know. Like, I think Mixon just looked like he lost juice in his lower body to me, and I get scared. Like last year, I thought Dalvin Cook was still a good player, but you could see Minnesota knew that he lost juice in his lower body.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. You know, and it showed up, right? It showed up at the Jets, and it showed up at Baltimore. You know, they obviously watched him. They didn't re-sign him.
No. even though he was portrayed as a weapon late in the season for the Baltimore Ravens. Derrick Henry is interesting, though, because he has 2,000-plus carries. He's entering his age 30 season here. And I do sit back and I ask myself, I'm like, how much juice is left in the tank? Now, I'm sure that they're going to try to manage this, given that the Ravens are a smart organization, and they know that, hey, we want him fresh for December and January. It doesn't matter what happens September, October, November. We want him later in the season. But, like, this is certain, it's something that they're going to have to go ahead and do, like, sort of a running back by committee, it feels like to me, at least. Because you got to keep him fresh with all those carries that he has under his belt.
Yeah, I think to me this, I think this is really about Henry's body's different than everybody else's. Like, I don't see the wear and tear on him. Mm. Like, I don't see him not breaking tackles. I don't see him not getting to the edge. I see those things. I see him doing the same things that he's always done. He's kind of like the tortoise. He just keeps coming and coming. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to manage it as much. They're going to obviously be situational when they want to go and throw the football and do some things. They can put their other backs in there. Because, look, let's face it, the Keaton Mitchell kid was one of their best players last year. Mm-hmm. And they signed him as a college free agent. Think about that. So for all the people that are killing Dallas for not – I mean, sometimes the best guys you sign are the two best players Baltimore had on their defense. They signed in August and September. Like, it's a long season. We're not there yet. Just relax. I'm not trying to apologize for Jerry, but I think to me, what fans don't realize is every nickel you give to somebody else, you're taking away from Parsons, you're taking away from Lamb. And until you figure out what it costs them, it's hard to do the other deals.
Yeah, those are big deals that they have coming up here. The Houston Texans, they made a big signing. You mentioned it, Danielle Hunter, 2 years, $49 million, $48 million of it guaranteed, or at least, I guess, a chance to go ahead and get that $48 million. Coming off a season, 16 and a half sacks. We figured that once the Vikings were making the signings that they were making, that Danielle Hunter was leaving. But for Houston, that's adding to a pass rush that already has Will Anderson, the defensive rookie of the year. Maybe they can go ahead, get a lead with Stroud, and then let those guys go ahead and get after the quarterback.
Well, look, you know, Greenard was a good player.
He was. Like,
the difference between Hunter and Greenard is, I mean, I'm saying maybe one's a 68, the other one's a 66. I mean, it's close, right? Now, there's a huge gap in their earnings, but it was close. I think Minnesota did a nice job. It allowed them to get Van Ginkle. It allowed them to get other players on their team, Aaron Jones. Look, I think where Minnesota got, and I know we're going to go to break here in a second, but I think Minnesota got to the point where there's a great scene in The Sopranos where, you know, the Melfi tells Tony, you know, Tony, you can't eat all the rigatoni. You got to share. Well, Kirk Cousins doesn't even pass the salt, right? You know, he took all the money, God bless him. And I think Minnesota got tired of that. Now Minnesota can build their team. Minnesota is building, and I got to believe, I think they're smart in that building. I got to believe that they're going to go hard after a quarterback. I'm not saying they're going after Caleb or Jaden Daniels, but I think they're going to see value at 11, where they maybe, could it be McCarthy? Could it be Bo Nix? Could it be Penix? I don't know. But I think they're going to do something, because I think they feel like they'll make that player better. And they got Darnold for a year to help develop him.
Could it be Drake May? Could they move up to 3?
I don't think you have to move. I think the Giants are a team you got to watch. But I think there's other teams. You know, one thing about quarterbacks, you know the teams that are not going to take them. I mean, Arizona's lock, stock, and barrel in on Kyler Murray. They're not taking a quarterback.
He's our guy.
So you can move around. Yeah. And he's our guy.
So, the Minnesota Vikings are picking 11th right now. The, I guess, assumption has been that we're going to see quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3 in the draft here, with Williams at 1 to Chicago, Daniels at 2 to the Commanders, at least as of right now, and then maybe May at 3 to the Patriots. But the Patriots went ahead and signed Jacoby Brissett. Now, nobody's saying he's going to be the future face of the franchise, but does that give them a little bit more wiggle room to, if they do get a trade that is enticing enough, that they could potentially move out of that spot? I know Patriots fans are probably yelling at me right now, saying, hey, we want to take a QB, but if the Vikings kind of gave them the sun, the moon, and the stars, would they move all the way down to 11 and let Minnesota get up there to number 3 to go ahead and take one of those QBs?
Well, I think to me that it comes down to, do they like the second level of quarterbacks? Do they like McCarthy? Do they like Nix? Do they like Penix? I mean, who do they like? And then you ask yourself, if I move back here and gain assets, I can still get one of these guys. It's about giving yourself what Jeff Bezos calls about, is having a second door. Mm-hmm. Give yourself a second door. If you only like one player, and sometimes we get so narrow-minded in our focus, we only like one player, then we can't move. You know, that's what happened to us at the Raiders all the time. Al would fall in love with a guy, and we couldn't move. So you can't be narrow-minded. If you move back, and look, here's what was going on. I mean, Brissett was really involved with New England and Atlanta. If Atlanta didn't get Cousins, I think Brissett would have gone to Atlanta.
Okay.
And when they got Cousins, that opened the door for him to go to New England, which gives them a good leader in the locker room. It gives them somebody who can operate the offense, and it can give them somebody that if they get that guy, they can develop him. But they have a good presence, but they signed him to a one-year deal. So it tells me that, you know, they're moving forward, whereas the Raiders signed Minshew to a longer-term deal, which says that they're going to maybe get one, maybe they won't get one this year.
Yeah, they could be comfortable with Gardner Minshew being their quarterback there. The Minnesota side of this, though, from Justin Jefferson's standpoint, interesting news that Schefter reported earlier this week over on NFL Live saying that Jefferson turned down a $30 million-plus offer last offseason. And I think a lot of folks are now wondering, with the quarterback situation being a little bit uncertain, Sam Darnold's in there for a one-year deal, but after that, we don't really know. Could they get a guy in the draft as a rookie? That's what we're talking about here. With it being uncertain, would Jefferson want to stay with the Vikings? Like, to me, this feels like if they give him the money that he wants, he would just go ahead and sign. But is there something there that we should be looking for here with Justin Jefferson potentially maybe wanting out of Minnesota?
I don't think – look, I know it's news that they offered him $30 million or plus, but that was a given. I mean, Tyreek Hill's at $30 million. You know Jefferson was going to get to 30, right? Devontae Adams is at 28. Cooper Kupp's at 26 and 7 and change. You know, Diggs is at 24. You know, Ridley just signed at 23, if that's the number, right? So I think to me, you knew you had to get over that. Mike Evans signed for 20.2. You know, he didn't sign for a big over 30 deal. So all along, you know Jefferson's going to get over 30. It's how much over 30 does he get? That's the question. Is it 32? Is it 33? Is it 31? Is it 30 and a half? So for Jefferson, why take the deal this early, you know? And I'm sure if I'm CeeDee Lamb, I'm waiting for Jefferson to lead the pack. I see what he gets. Yeah. See, the contracts that are going to move the needle are the younger guys that teams have saved the money for. The Landon Dickinson contract that the Eagles did, right? You know, that's the contract that's going to set the market, right? It's going to set the market for the guards.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with the wide receivers. You mentioned that Lamb needs a contract. He doesn't need one, but he's eligible for one. Chase is eligible for a contract, right, as well as Justin Jefferson for the Minnesota Vikings. All right, that does it for us here on DraftKings Network. But as always, our podcast audience will still continue on the other side talking about some of the best available free agents now that we're through the first wave of free agency here. But for DKN, we'll see you guys on Monday. Podcast, stick around. We'll be back after the break. Yesterday, we got the news that the Chargers would be making some moves to shake up the roster, and boy, did they. They released Pro Bowl wide receiver Mike Williams as they go ahead and free up some of that cap space there. Williams was due to account $32.46 million against the cap in 2024. The release goes ahead and saves them $20 million on the salary cap, to where this is starting to become a little bit of an unfortunate story here for Mike Williams. Really talented player, incredibly talented downfield threat, but unfortunately, he just can't stay healthy, can't stay on the field, and the Chargers felt that they couldn't continue down that path.
Yeah, you know, he only played three games last year. He missed the final four games of the season. Remember, he got hurt in 22. And, you know, it's just unfortunate because he's such an explosive player. But what you're seeing here is in 21, he averaged 15-1 a catch. In 22, he averaged 14-2. Last year, he was down to 13-1. And he only had one touchdown. Now he only played in three games, but his explosiveness was kind of dwindling. And a lot of this is due to the injuries because, you know, I kind of felt like they would try to keep him because he is their home run hitter, that he makes their offense go. But clearly, you know, they drafted the kid from TCU last year to give him some outside help. That hasn't really worked out so far. But this move, kind of now that you think about it, makes sense. I thought they might redo his deal. But because of the injury history, I think it's just, you know, I mean, Mike Williams will look good on your depth chart and on your gain-loss thing that you do. but are you going to get that out of him, right? Are you going to get the production going back to 19 when he averaged 20 yards a catch, you know, or the 18 when he had 10 touchdowns? So I think that's the biggest – this is a durability and injury. Is he still the same player? It's the same question we're asking about Tony Pollard. Will he be the same player? Same question you're going to ask if you re-sign – if the Ravens re-sign J.K. Dobbins, is he going to have the same juice left? That's what you're always worried about. And the trajectory of Williams has been slowly declining, and it's in the numbers, and you can't ignore it.
Yeah, Mike Williams, he's 29 years old. He's going to turn 30 in October. It's like you'd figure that maybe – a one-year deal, one of those kind of prove-it type of deals that a team could sign him to, because he'll get signed. Like, I think he's too talented of a player. Someone will take the shot.
Oh, yeah, but he's got to pass a physical.
Yeah.
He's going to have to go take a physical. They're going to have to see where he is in his rehab. I think that's the bigger issue, right? I mean, that was the whole thing about did Atlanta tamper with Cousins, because Cousins said at the press conference, well, I talked to the trainer. Well, when did you do that? You know, I mean, it's amazing. You did this $180 million contract in 2 hours, and you talked to the trainer? Like,
technology.
You know, Atlanta, yeah, exactly. I guess, I mean, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but I think clearly, you know, he's going to have to go take some physicals and prove to people he is healthy, right? Yeah. I mean, that's going to be important, and I think it's going to be reflective in the market. He was never going to get what his base salary was at the Chargers, and the fact the Chargers didn't even go to him to redo it, like they went to Khalil Mack and redid his deal, but they didn't redo Williams' deal. That makes you, if you're a GM in the league, that makes you a little bit hesitant. Okay, what are we doing, right? What are we doing? We're now in the free agent visit program, right?
Yeah.
So we see Carolina going, and I mean, Carolina's going to replace Burns. They're bringing Clowney in. Like, what is the plan? I had some idiot on Twitter this morning, Femi, tell me that I'm a Carolina hater because they fired my son. So I tweeted back to him, well, tell me one good thing they've done since this guy's taken over as the owner. Like, tell me, like, how do you – I was on Pat McAfee yesterday, and I was on before – I was the opening act for Luke Combs. I was pretty proud of that.
You know? Look at you, going on
and
tour.
We start talking about, you know, like, what have they done? Like, they have no plan. Like, what is their plan in Carolina? And for anybody who thinks the owner's not doing all this, this to me – and I'm not absolving Dan Morgan of it because, you know, I think to me he was in the room when everybody was there and he's still there – but this, to me, has the handprints of an owner just arbitrarily, okay, let's bring this guy, let's do this. Somebody's advising him, and let's do it. Because there is no philosophical understanding of what they're building in Carolina. There's none. In the players they sign, in the way they – I mean, they paid Robert Hunt. Everybody's ball, they pay Robert Hunt. I mean, Miami wasn't in love with Robert Hunt. They paid him $50 million, $100 million. He's overweight. You know, he struggles. Miami, why did Miami run the offense that they ran with Tua? Because they knew they couldn't protect him if it was a regular offense. And Hunt was in that line. Like, that would have been the last place I looked for linemen, would have been Miami. But, you know, oh, they signed this guy. And then they signed, you know, another offensive guard.
And so, Damian Lewis from Seattle. Yeah.
I mean, in Seattle, okay, Seattle was replacing him. Seattle didn't want him back. Like, that's going to tell you something? I think to me this is pretty clear that there is no plan in Carolina. There's still no plan, and that Morgan doesn't have a plan. I mean, I don't think Morgan could put together a four-page organizational thing that would be able to say, okay, here's the philosophy of what we're trying to accomplish, and here's how we're going to build this organization. That's, to me, what I thought when I thought Tepper was going to be a great owner. That's what I thought he was going to do. I thought he was going to take all the principles of business and apply it to his team. Here's our organizational structure. Here's how we do it. You know, I'm going to take this model. Here's our core principles. Here's how we're handling things. None of it. I mean, it's random. It's arbitrary. It's this. Let's go this guy. Let's go that guy. Let's do this. Let's do that. Got no chance.
Yeah. They said goodbye to a couple of good front seven players. Obviously, the trade with Brian Burns with the New York Giants, but Frankie Louvu also leaving to go to the Washington Commanders. Louvu was one of their better players in that front seven.
I have no problem with them getting rid of Burns. I'm not saying that. But to trade him for a 2 and a 5 when you had 2 ones on the table, like, who wasn't screaming in the room? Morgan was in the room then. Who was screaming to not take that deal from the Rams? Like, why wouldn't you have taken that deal? 2 number ones for a guy that, you know, look, do I think he should be the second highest paid defensive in the league? No. I think he's a good player, but I've watched enough Carolina games to know that he doesn't tilt the field. Now, he'll probably be better because he's got Thibodeau on the other side to help him rush, so maybe he'll be better. But what I thought was a good young defense in Carolina has gotten destroyed. You know, I don't think Chin was very healthy last year, but I thought early in his career he was a really good player.
Good.
I thought Chin was a better player than Dugger.
Yeah.
I really did. I thought he was going to be a really good young player. And I think sometimes the conditions lend itself to where you, again, it goes back to what we said in the first block. Are you going to develop the players? Are we going to bring – see, there's no development plan there. There's no harmony within the organization. There's no structure within that. So you can't really get anything going. This is why it's fascinating for me to see, well, Bob Myers from his basketball background comes to Washington. Well, you don't understand the first thing about player development when you coach in the NBA. Yes, I know you work with the G League and all that crap. No, you got way too many people you're trying to manage in the NFL. And if you don't have a systematic approach to player development, how we're going to develop the players, who we should develop, who we shouldn't develop, who should we cut, who should we replace, you can't. And what you see is there's, like in Carolina, there's no systems. There's nothing in place. It's like, you know, it's funny. You know, it's like when you read the Walsh book, which I've been Finding the Winning Edge, the hard book to get. You go through it. I mean, he gives you the blueprint on how to set it up. Now, it needs to get updated. It needs to get, you know, there's some things in that book that are no longer applicable today, but the majority of the book is outstanding. You just can't get it. I asked Brian Billick why, and it's got some publishing thing going on I don't understand. But for me, I think that's clearly what's missing. That's clearly what's missing there. And they don't want it, obviously. I mean, when you don't even call, I mean, you could have hired Belichick, let him come in and for 4 years build that fundamental organization, get you the infrastructure you need. And then if he leaves, you don't. I'm not saying you should hire one of his disciples, but now you know how to build a team. Isn't it funny? If Belichick would have signed all the guys that the Patriots have signed this year, you realize what the national media would be doing to him right now?
Yeah, it would not be great. What they're saying about him.
For a guy that has no ability to draft, you know, and he doesn't know anything about players, you know. I mean, last time I checked, you know, they're what did they sign? They signed, you know, Hunter Henry back, Kendrick Bourne back.
They signed Josh Uche back.
They signed Jennings back. They signed Dugger back. Like, for a guy that can't evaluate, they're bringing a lot of their guys back.
Yeah.
Awanu back, you know.
Well, he tore
it's
it
hilarious.
Down.
It's all narrative. It's all what is the narrative that you choose to feed. And the narrative for somebody who's won 6 Super Bowls, he can't draft. Now, I guess the players just showed up. Well, if you look at the documentary, according to what people tell me, he wasn't even in the building for 20 of those years. So makes no sense.
Should have been texting back those insiders. That's what it all comes down to. The Panthers, our producer Elliot sent this to me. He said the Panthers number 2 in total guarantees and number 3 in total contract value in free agency, according to SpotTrack. So with all that said, they still have the worst roster in the league.
I mean, yeah. It overpaid. Like, if you think Robert Hunt's going to be a Pro Bowl guard and you paid him like one, you're crazy. Like, you're not. Who's evaluating there? Like, who's putting the dollar sign? Like, where's the discipline within the program? Like, I would have thought somebody who's run a hedge fund would have had this kind of discipline, this ability to understand that there's value. Like, here's how we're systematically going to build the team. And the way we build a team is systematically through player development, through signing some players. It's like what I cited about with Baltimore, the ability to have a vision to think ahead. Okay, we know we're not going to sign this guy. We got to sign that. We got to draft this. There's a unification within the organization that you can read and see. It's a powerful thing. It's everybody aligned on that. But when you've got this randomness that's going on here, it's just, and you got somebody who has no idea what he's doing, who's playing fantasy football, you got no chance. I feel bad for Dave Canales. I mean, he's going to be asked to make the quarterback better. And, you know, and I feel bad for the coaches there, because there's nobody is all on this. There's nobody leading this charge other than the owner, and Dan Morgan is going to be his guy to take the fall.
Did you like the Deontay Johnson trade? They traded with Pittsburgh here, sending Dante Jackson over to the Steelers.
I thought they did that. They were going to do that trade last year, you know, and I think, I don't know if Pittsburgh backed out or Carolina backed out, but that was the trade that was going to happen. Look, there's some reason that they traded Johnson from Pittsburgh. You know, I didn't think Jackson was an elite cover guy, but I thought he was one of their better young players that they had on the team. Remember, this team was 2 years ago. They with no quarterback, they won seven games after they fired Rhule.
Yeah, it was what, Sam Darnold and P.J. Walker.
I mean, and that, so they got a 1 year receiver. I mean, when you add up all the things, you saw it on Twitter. When you add up what they traded McCaffrey for, what they did, all those things they did. I mean, they ended up paying, I think somebody had what they paid for Sam Darnold ended up being less than they got for Brian Burns. Can you imagine that?
They traded
more for Sam Darnold than what, like, who's doing the numbers in there? Who's advising them? Like, who is saying, okay, this is smart, this isn't? Like, if there were a board of directors in Carolina, somebody would oust the president.
It's malpractice is the perfect word for it. And it's from Scott Barrett on Twitter, who went ahead and what they traded for Brian Burns, Bryce Young, and Christian McCaffrey trades. They traded this year's number one overall pick, Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, a 2023 first round pick in the top 10, a 2023 second round pick, then a 2024 first rounder, a 2025 first round pick in exchange for 1 year Brian Burns, Bryce Young, DJ Johnson, an outside linebacker, and two round five picks. So that's what they went ahead and got for Christian McCaffrey, Bryce Young, and Brian Burns. So you tell me where they're supposed to have some success.
Remarkable, right?
Real quick here, we're going to wrap up here pretty soon. Any thoughts on Jimmy Garoppolo? The Raiders officially released him. Jimmy G, he got healthy towards the end of the season here. Obviously, he can probably still start in this league, but we've discussed how a lot of the starting position, the musical chairs, have started to be filled up. What's next here for Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, he's like a lot like Fields. I mean, he's going to have to go somewhere and be a backup, you know, and I'm sure he's going to go somewhere to be somebody's backup that he knows the system, whether it's, you know, with a former coach that he's been with, or he's just going to have to, you know, just wait it out and see what he can do. But, there's really no jobs. Does Seattle sign him, you know, up there? Because, you know, Drew Locke went to the Giants. They don't have a backup quarterback behind Geno Smith. It's going to be a minimum deal. I don't know how the guarantees of his contract because of the suspension for the two games work, but you know, it's going to be a cheap deal. There are a lot of guys out there that you're going to get now. Now's the time when your pro personnel department has to really do a good job of being able to handle, you know, the value and find the player. And this is where the GM can go to a player and say, "Look, 1 year you come in here, you know, you do some things and you're going to get paid or we're going to pay you." And that's a big selling point when you do that, right?
Do you think that Jimmy would ever go back to San Francisco now that Darnold's in Minnesota?
Well, when they re-signed Brandon Allen, I kind of felt like that we knew Darnold was going. I mean, if it's the right economic deal, I think San Francisco's smart if they did it. He knows the system. He knows what to do. They have a backup that could play. And it protects their team. I mean, for all the conversation about Jimmy in Las Vegas, who they, you know, they hated him in Las Vegas, not that that Carr was any good in New Orleans, but, you know, he still won games for them. So, yeah, I could see that. I mean, he'd have to be comfortable being behind Purdy, but I think Jimmy's probably comfortable being a backup at this point.
Let's get to some of the other guys that are without contracts right now before we wrap up here. We mentioned how Chase Young, Jadeveon Clowney, they're going on visits to Carolina. We'll see what happens at Clowney. We said he signed last year in August, ended up being the best pass rusher for the Baltimore Ravens. But how about Tyron Smith at left tackle? Injury being a concern with him. Still played at a really high level when he was on the field. And then Justin Simmons at safety, who the Broncos released last week. Any update on where those guys might go? Or are those markets a little bit more dry than they at least anticipated heading into free agency?
Well, you got to believe that Simmons's market must be better than we think it is because, you know, the Eagles were on him and they took Johnson Gardner. And so that obviously that the agent for Simmons must think he's got a better deal somewhere out there. I don't know. But, you know, usually now we are Thursday of the free agency. This is now people turn their attention to the draft. This is about getting to the draft. This is about doing the things you have to do. Moving forward and trying to buy economic deals. There's money out there. There's a ton of money, but I think the smart teams are signing their own players, right? I think that's the best thing they're doing. They're signing their own players, and I think that's what you have to do. I think what Indy's did, you know, Indy when you look at their team, they haven't made that many giant steps. I know they signed Flacco, but they've signed a lot of their younger players to contracts. They know who they are. They got them, and they use the cap room to do that. They still have to get better, don't get me wrong, but I think that's a smart play to do, whereas just overspending in free agency. Like, now you don't have to overspend. Now you got it. I thought it was interesting, too, how the kickers started getting money there.
Yeah, Jake Elliott got a contract.
People started paying kickers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're valuable. Man, you need them.
Of course. I mean, what we saw last year is like they, you know, look, if New England had a kicker, they would have been better. Moody in San Francisco, you were nervous holding your breath on that one the whole time, right?
Mm-hmm. They missed that extra point there, then ultimately swung that game. And as the reason why we went to overtime, the Chiefs ended up winning it. Last question here before we wrap up. What's Denver doing at quarterback?
I think that's to be determined. I think they're going to draft one. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think they took, the $54 million cap hit all this year. They're going to draft one. I think this is the reset year for them. Get their cap in order. Try to find a young quarterback that they like. Develop them. I mean, Sean, Sean still regrets not drafting Mahomes when he was in New Orleans. He might still be there if they were able to make that trade.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Sean has his eye on these guys. And one thing about Sean now, which you got to be careful. Sean's not afraid to pay. He's not afraid. And he'll pay. He'll pay whatever it takes to get the quarterback. He understands that. And I think Minnesota's in the same ballpark.
So he could maybe get aggressive there. The Broncos right now picking 12th in the draft this season. I think they'll be a fascinating team. Maybe it's one of these guys like Penix or Bo Nix. Or do they go ahead and wow the New England Patriots who are picking third overall?
I think it's going to be somebody who can handle it at the line of scrimmage. Because remember, there's two kind of game changers. There's the guy like Peyton Manning who, got to the line of scrimmage, went no huddle, but didn't really no huddle. Never motioned, never did anything, lined up the guys at the same way, and then read the defense and called the play. And then there's Breeze and Brady, right, who get to the line, called the play. Remember, Breeze, what Breeze would do is what Sean would do with Breeze is he would get to the format, he'd get to the line, have two plays, he'd motion somebody across, set them down, read the coverage, and then changed it and went to something else and something here. And that kind of processing is what he's going to want. And, to me, I could see him being more in love with a J.J. McCarthy than he would be a Bo Nix. Somebody whose feet and arm are tied together.
I can't wait for the draft to get here. We're about 5 weeks away from the NFL draft, and it's going to really start cranking up once we get the pro day. We saw the Bo Nix pro day earlier this week. Caleb Williams pro day is next week, and we'll be covering it all here on the GM Shuffle. But that does it for us on this edition of the pod. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. As always, thank you to you, Michael. I will talk to you on Monday. Maybe we'll get some more
Monday
signings.
Let's do it.
We'll do it on Monday. We'll see you guys then. Subscribe, rate, and review as always, and have a good weekend.